Hi, good morning. And you are listening to Smart Talk. We're here every Saturday morning at 9 to talk about education, education policy, regular policy that's affecting us at a state and national level, and research that's happening at the University of Arizona. So thanks for joining us. We have two great guests today, Dr. Rovi Gravois-Shaw and Greer Warren. Also joining us is our co-host, Janice Porter.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming in. And if you have any questions or comments for them, you can give us a call at 520-790-2040. Just before we start, I wanted to mention something. There's a place at the University of Arizona College of Ed called Worlds of Words, and they have over 40,000 books from every place in the world. It's this international book, children's book holding place. And they happen to be having a sale right now on the most incredible books in the world. And I went there yesterday and picked up a number of dystopian novels, dystopian young adult novels for my grandson, but also wonderful children's picture books for my other kids, my other grandchildren. And today, yesterday, the deals were phenomenal. Brand new books that cost $21.95 you can get for $3, never used, brand new. And then, but today, and then you buy those for $3. Today, the books are half off. It's at the College of Ed, which is on 2nd, right next to the giant garage at the 2nd Street trolley. You could take the trolley and get off right there. And books are half off. It's 10 to 4. And it is wonderful. You can bring, oh, but you need to bring a cash, check, and a tote bag. So, our first guest, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Robin.
So, Dr. Rovi Gravois-Shaw is the proud father of three. He's a TUSD parent and a product of public education. Dr. Rovi, and so you go by your first name.
You can go by Dr. Rovi. That makes it a little easier.
Okay. Dr. Rovi has always prioritized his children's education. He serves as the treasurer of his daughter's PTA and is a member of the TUSD Governing Board Audit Committee, where, and this is going to be shocking, he uses his Eller MBA to help the district do better and have people understand financial things. But in outside of TUSD, he's a family physician. He's an associate professor at the U of A. He cares for all ages of parents. So this is amazing. You have an MBA after you became a doctor and moved here?
I did. I got that from Eller just about 3 years ago. We graduated.
Wow.
And really has helped just understand finances, understand big systems, and understand how to move systems like where I work or something like TUSD forward.
So that is amazing. So in addition, you also, because apparently you like to have five jobs at a time, serves as medical director of the Alvernon Family Medicine and the U of A Mobile Health Program, which provides free care to underserved communities throughout southern Arizona. Also, in your previous life, I've heard you talk about in Chicago helping high school students get protection and from STDs and birth control and health issues.
Right. When I was in Chicago before coming to Tucson, I worked for the Cook County Health System there. And one of the places that I provided care was at one of the high school-based health centers just outside of Chicago. And it was a really high-needs location, and we were able to do a lot of good work for the students there.
Great. And so in addition to that, because he has so much time on his house, he has on his time, on his hands. Thank you, Janice. House hands. He is running for TUSD Governing Board, School Board.
I am, and thank you for that introduction. I think the most important thing in terms of what propels me to run for the TUSD Governing Board is really having that personal stake in the fight to making sure that our school district works for all families, including my own family, for the years to come. I just calculated it out recently, and we have a second grader. Our oldest daughter is 8 years old, and a second grader, we're turning eight this week at Lineweaver. So we're TUSD parents and have been TUSD parents for 3 years now. And we have twin 21-month-old toddlers. And so we will be TUSD parents until 2036 when our youngest graduate from high school. And so we definitely have, our family has that personal stake in the fight to making sure that TUSD succeeds for our family as well as all Tucson families.
That will be a long time.
2036, yep.
I remember my first PTA meetings at the elementary school my children ended up going to. This was when my oldest daughter had just started there. And I met this guy who had been a parent there for 42 years.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't top him, but I came very, very close. So why did you decide to run?
A lot of reasons. You know, as a physician in our community, I've worked on a lot of health policy issues and really see myself as an advocate for my patients and for my communities on issues as diverse as clean air, on women's health, on LGBTQ safety. And I've been fighting for these issues over the years. And coming here to Tucson, I've been hearing from my patients and from my families about their struggles in education. I take care of a lot of kids in my practice. And when we have kids in elementary school all the way through high school, we're always asking about how they're doing in school, issues with bullying, issues with academic achievement, issues with behavioral issues. And I hear so often from these kids and from their parents about their struggles in our school district and how they need individuals to really advocate for them to help create a TUSD that works for all families. And over the years, I also heard from my own husband's struggles as an educator. He spent his career, my husband Tim, spent his career as an elementary school teacher. When he came to Tucson, he became a principal within TUSD. He worked in Southwest Tucson and in Midvale Park as a principal in our district, and he did that for 4 years. And I got to hear from him day in, day out, talk about some of the great things and amazing things he was doing for the students and families down there, and all the struggles that he really felt that he was having and the challenges that he really struggled to meet for the community there. And after 4 years, he decided to leave TUSD, not feeling that he had the support he needed to make the positive impact he needed to do, and he left TUSD last year. And on the opposite front, you know, as TUSD parents, we've got to see the amazing good that TUSD could do. We're proud TUSD parents. We love our daughter's school, her teachers or her principal, and the programming that she has. And we want to make sure that as happy TUSD parents, that everyone in TUSD has the same opportunities to really have their children succeed and grow and learn in an environment that really makes sense for them. And again, that personal stake in making sure that TUSD works for my own family for the next 18 years, as well as working for all Tucson families for the generations to come.
So what are your, what are the priorities you have with if you get on the board?
If I get elected, there's a number of things I'm hoping to accomplish. And first and foremost, and it's not the most glamorous part about being a school board member, but I think one of the most important things is really getting a hold on the finances of our district. One of the most important roles of our governing board is that fiduciary responsibility and making sure that our district finances are sound, that we're using our taxpayer money in the most effective way possible to make sure that our students have the resources they need to succeed. I've been on the audit committee, as you mentioned, for almost a year and a half now. And for most of that time, I feel like I'm the non-accountant parent, token parent of the committee. And I'm in a room on the table, surrounded by other accountants who are helping evaluate the district and as part of the committee in almost monthly meetings. And we're going over the financial statements, we're going over the budgets. And I see the accountants struggle almost as much as I am in terms of making heads or tails about what's going on with our district finances and budget. If our accountants are struggling with it, our school board members are probably struggling with it, and our public, you know, can't hold us accountable. And so one of my biggest goals as a school board member is making sure I hold our superintendent and our financial leadership of our district accountable so that we have financial statements and a budgeting process that's usable by everyone, our governing board, our public, to hold us accountable, that makes sense, and that really we can use to best use our finances available to help our students succeed. Number two is really focusing on evidence-based innovation for our district. As a physician, so much of what we do over the years and so much of my practice is based on what the latest evidence shows. You know, we get new guidelines, new protocols on how to best manage patient care and how to best do screening tests, how to best manage disease. And I've changed my practice a number of times over the years based on what the latest evidence show. And we need to do better as a school district to make sure that we're using the evidence that we have out there. And there's a lot of evidence that we have out there in terms of classroom sizes, how to manage behavioral issues, how to manage teachers and help them succeed as well. And I see our district oftentimes doing the opposite. We cut programs like arts, music, and physical education when the evidence is clear that academic achievement improves when we have those programs in our school. We know what classroom sizes we need to achieve the best outcomes. We know how to best manage discipline based on the evidence. And one of my goals as a school board member is making sure the policies of our district really fit what the evidence demonstrates is best practice for our schools. And finally, it's going to be the inequities in our district. We have a large district, and I think we know that we have some schools and some communities that are haves and some schools and some communities that are have-nots. And making sure that our resources are distributed in a more equitable way so that all of our schools and all of our communities within TUSD have the resources they need to succeed.
Janice, you had a question.
Yes, you mentioned discipline, and I understand the concept of restorative justice, but I wonder if you'd talk about how that works in a school, both for young children and for high school students.
Sure, thank you. I think restorative justice is really a strong way to go about handling some of the discipline issues, making sure that our students understand the consequences of their actions and are able to make amends for the consequences and who they might have hurt. A couple of things to say about that. You know, I think when I've been to a number of schools over the last few months and talking to teachers on the ground about how they handle discipline issues, you know, and what they're able to do successfully and what the challenges are. And I think most teachers and most educators and most administrators agree that restorative justice, you know, is what they want to accomplish in their schools. But a lot of teachers and administrators don't think that they have the right training and resources in place in the schools to do it in an effective way. So I want to make sure that we don't just do lip service to these practices, but are able to have the training for our teachers and administrators and have the resources of counselors and behavioralists and other social workers and other individuals who need to be involved in this to make sure that we can do this correctly. And also making sure that we have the ability to do the discipline and other things when restorative justice doesn't work. And we actually need to do something further beyond that. And we have the ability for our principals and our administrators and our teachers to do what they need to do to make sure they keep their classrooms safe.
And we need to take a break, and so we can follow up on the restorative justice when we get back. We are speaking with Dr. Rovi, who's running for TUSD School Board. We will be right back. If you have any questions, you can call at 790-2040. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Smart Talk. This is Robin Hiller. I'm your host today, and we are speaking with Dr. Rovi Grivoy.
Rovi Grivoy Shah.
Grivoy Shah.
Thank you.
Thank you. I had him write it out for me, and I lost that piece of paper. Now I found it. Okay. And Janice Porter, and we were talking about restorative justice. Well, yesterday I had a follow-up question, and I know Janice does also. TUSD announced last year in the legislature passed an increase from $12 million to $32 million of money to make campuses safer. And originally it was going to be for just school resource officers, but they got to expand that and they could add social workers and school counselors. And TUSD announced what they were going to do, and they have expanded. They're going to have 15 positions, and 8 of them are going to be in social workers at 8 schools, and 4 schools are going to have school counselors for the first time. So I wanted to get your impression on where we should be spending money that initially was only going to be able to be used for school resource officers, and then that it got changed at the last minute.
I think there's a lot we can do here. You know, I'm a community family physician, and in my clinic, I see a lot of children who have a number of behavioral health issues and needs. They have psychiatric diagnosis. They have ACEs, adverse childhood events that have led to trauma and the effects of trauma. And we struggle in medicine to meet those kids' needs, and especially if these kids are coming from low-income communities and they have Medicaid or our state access system, there are not a lot of resources in the medical community to help them meet their needs. I struggle with referring them to psychologists, psychiatrists, and other behavioral health resources in our community, and it's not fair, but the burden of a lot of these mental illnesses in our kids are fall in our schools because they're there for, you know, most of their days, most of their weeks, and most of the months of a year. And that's where these issues are going to manifest the most. And there aren't the resources in our community to meet those needs. And now we're faced with our schools trying to find ways to meet those needs. And having the behavioralists, the social workers, the counselors at our schools sometimes can seem counterintuitive because, you know, they have, you know, if we have access or Medicaid or insurance, they should be seeing individuals outside of our schools and getting the help they need. But unfortunately, the reality is that this needs to happen in our schools for these students to be successful, for them to be ready to learn and grow, and for our classrooms to be safe. And I'm excited to see that the state is adding some more funds to help meet this unmet need, and our schools are taking this seriously as a problem and getting the resources we need to hopefully get some of our students at a better place.
Yeah. Janice, do you want to ask something about restorative justice?
Just, that's very good news about counselors and social workers. Let's do preventative work before we get to the resource officers. I just wanted to know, Dr. Ravi, if students are trained in restorative justice, are they part of the process of how it works?
Well, that's a great question, because for this to be successful, the students need to be a partner in the restorative justice process. And from what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't believe there is much training of our students on being partners in this. And I think it becomes only relevant to the students when they're in the process to begin with. And so if the students isn't a partner, or their parents and their families aren't able to be part of this process, and it's not going to be successful. And I think we can do better by making sure that we are partnering with the students, that we're partnering with their parents, and bringing the families involved more effectively on these issues.
Thank you.
The other thing, or I have two other things I'd like to bring up, but the first also happened yesterday, where a bill is being proposed for next legislative session on vaccinations and allowing students to not have vaccinations. And you're kind of a combination of the medical world and the education world. What do you think about this?
I think we forget that these diseases that we're vaccinating against are real diseases and aren't just hypothetical problems that are made up or science fiction realm. We were seeing these outbreaks of measles in different communities. You know, I spent some time during my medical school rotations. I spent some electives in India in my fourth year, just doing some tropical medicine and seeing what medicine's like in a different country. And I got to see, you know, the realities of polio in children and rubella in neonates and newborns, and these diseases that we forget really exist, and that we have the privilege of not having to see on a regular basis in our own country. I've seen these diseases in other places, and my children are all vaccinated. I'm very much in favor of vaccinations. And I think, the concepts of herd immunity and making sure that we keep everyone safe from these diseases coming back in our own country is a reality. And we see what happens when we aren't vaccinating regularly and we get these outbreaks of measles or pertussis or other things that are really affecting our kids negatively.
Janice has just reminded me to say the call-in number, 520-790-2040. Also, there are kids, it's not only protecting our own kids, but there are kids that can't be vaccinated. And who are the kids who can't be vaccinated, who, by having a larger population that has no vaccine, it puts them at higher risk?
Right. Some of these vaccines, especially those that are live vaccines, like the MMR vaccine and others that are live vaccines, are can be dangerous for kids with immunodeficiencies or other health problems that they can't get vaccines. When I talk to patients in my clinic, when I talk to an adult, for example, for the flu vaccine, who's otherwise healthy, I remind them that it's not just about them, but it's about everyone around them. That they might not have severe consequences of something like the flu, but their parent or grandparent might, or their child might. And so we're making sure with the herd immunity that we're keeping everyone protected, for even those who aren't able to get the vaccine themselves.
So getting vaccines protects kids who have, what's an example of a immuno?
I don't want to get too technical detail on this, but there's different kinds of congenital illnesses or other immunological illnesses that individuals are either born with or can develop early on in life that can preclude them from being able to get vaccines, especially those that are live vaccines.
So there are children who can't get vaccines for legitimate reasons.
For health reasons, because it's not safe for them, right?
Okay. The other thing you mentioned is creating more education inequity, or no, not creating more, creating, stopping the inequity that happens in our district. And what kinds of things do you want to work on?
Making sure that, we have things like art and music in all of our schools. I'm lucky enough to be a parent of a student who has an OMA program, for example. We got to see this manifest just this week. So my daughter, she's a second grader at Lineweaver, and that's an OMA school, and OMA focuses on bringing art and music and other concepts and of creativity into our schools. And I love that she gets to come home singing new songs and talking about, you know, what she learned in not just in the academic sphere of math and science and reading, but also in that creative sphere of arts and music. And just this past Thursday, 2 days ago, I was privileged enough to be able to, you know, skip work for a few minutes and head over to my daughter's school in the middle of the day and see the second graders perform for their OMA winter performance, and see my daughter up there on stage singing and dancing and doing all these great things because of that program and what that brings to her and her life. And not all schools have that. Not all schools are able to afford those arts and physical education, other programming that we know engages students and helps improve academic achievement, and making sure that we find a way through our regular M&O budget, maintenance and operations budget, or through Title I or through, you know, DSEG monies or other ways to fund these programs that we know really make that impact, and making sure that things like that are equitable throughout our district. Making sure, you know, some schools have counselor ratios of 200 students to one counselor, and some schools have a counselor ratio of like 600 to one. Mm-hmm. We need to find ways to making sure there's equity in those kinds of ratios, so that all students have the opportunities to have a counselor when they need them, and not share one with 600 other students.
And is there, Arizona is often listed as being at the bottom of the heap in education funding, either 47th or 49th or mm-hmm. at the bottom. Is there funding in the district to create an equitable system?
Well, part of the role of the school board member is advocating on the state level to making sure that we have better funding of our schools. And so I look forward to, if elected, to really take that voice of our whole school district to Phoenix, to making sure that all the legislators know what the consequences are of our being at the bottom of the heap on state funding of our schools. And another role of the board, as I mentioned earlier, is to really look at our finances, look at our budget, you know, find out how are we spending our money, what are our priorities, and making sure that we're able to prioritize things like classroom sizes and counselors and these things that we know are important for our students, that we fund that in a way effectively provide some equity through our district.
Right. So is there money to be moved around? I mean, you're on the finance mm-hmm. committee, the audit committee, or it's on the legislature to increase our funding, the governor and the legislature?
There's both. I mean, I think we can do a lot. You just mentioned in terms of, you know, the counselor and a budget for counseling services that our state is able to provide, and that's going to make a huge difference for us to be able to fund a lot of these positions. I think we can be creative with our budget and finances more than we are. There's a lot of different pots of money that our finances are coming from. Some of it comes from the state. Some of it comes from Title I. Some of it comes from DSEG dollars. And, you know, there's so many different pots that we have. So a lot of our schools, you know, are able to use our tax credit money for some of these services for students, and making sure that our district is there supporting each school to make sure how we can fund the services that we know we need, the behavioral health services, the arts, music, physical education, the classroom size that we know that makes a difference, that we're looking school by school, region by region throughout our district to make sure that we can support our schools financially to do this.
Janice has a question.
I was at a presentation yesterday where we were reminded that the tax credits, which is lots of people are thinking about at this time of year, $13 per student flows in with tax credits to poor schools, and $91 per student with tax credits flows into the wealthier schools. How do you feel about tax credits, and how would you equalize some of that?
That's a great question. We know that some of our schools, I just look at the elementary schools where we're kind of in the middle of right now as parents. Some of our elementary schools have $10,000, $20,000 of tax credit funds in the bank, and some of our elementary schools have hundreds of thousands of dollars in the bank of tax credit money. You know, and I, as a I was a treasurer of my daughter's PTA in the past, and I got to see, you know, how tax credit monies were used, how PTA funds were being used to fund some of these services, and not all the schools have an engaged community that can fund some of these things for our schools. And so I think the school district can help schools market the tax credit better, making sure that they do some advertising in the community to so that, you know, a lot of the money doesn't come just from the parents, it comes from the retired individuals that live in the community around the schools and the other community members and the businesses, and making sure that we can help our schools that are struggling to raise tax credit and PTA funds to market better in the community, so that we can get some equity in that as well.
You know, there are several places that have a similar system that have tried to do. One is in Vermont and one is in Portland, Oregon. And what they ended up doing, and I don't know if this can be done by district or if it has to be done at the state level, is districts or schools that collected a certain amount of money. Like, let's say they, in Vermont, they call them gold schools, and they collect more money than the other schools. And after the schools raise a certain amount of money, $20,000, the next bunch of money they save gets actually divided and goes into low-income schools. They still get to keep half, but then it starts going out into lower-income schools, because some schools just aren't going to have the capacity because of their neighborhood, because of the students who attend. And what would you think of a program like that?
It's something we need to consider. I think we need to talk to the schools and talk to the parents and see how that's going to affect their fundraising and their ability to reach out to the parents in the community. And I think we need to figure out what we can do in terms of state law, because a lot of this is governed by state law in terms of how the tax credits work. And we need to explore the legal aspects of some of that as well.
Okay. We have about 48 seconds left. Do you want to add anything about why you're running, or anything you feel we've missed?
I encourage everyone to learn, you know, pay attention to all the different races. You know, it's going to be a very busy year next year. We're going to have a presidential election year. We're going to be voting for senators and congresspeople. Pay attention to who's on your school board, who's in your legislature, because some of these decisions that affect us most are going to be coming from our school boards, from state legislature, and those are the races that sometimes we pay least attention to. Go to my website, learn more about our race, drravifortusd.com. That's DRRAVI for TUSD, FORTUSD.com. Learn more about why I'm running and who I am, and I hope I get your support, because I think we can work together and really help create healthy schools for a brighter future for all Tucson families.
Okay, well, I want to thank you for coming in. And we've been speaking with Dr. Ravi Gravois-Shaw, who is running for TUSD School Board. And thanks.
Thank you.
We'll be back in a second. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Smart Talk. We're here every Saturday morning from 9 to 10. We have just been speaking with Dr. Ravi Gravois-Shaw, who is running for TUSD School Board. And we are now joined by Greer Warren. We also, I don't want to forget, the co-host today is Janice Porter, who is a retired librarian and also has her doctorate in education. She's looking at me and saying with a surprised look.
No, I was trying to figure out how you could forget me, Robin.
I never forget Janice.
and has done a lot on access to children and what it does, or children's literature and what it does for kids, but also has been a great advocate for education in Arizona and for students being turned on to education literature.
Yes, thank you.
So, Greer Warren is our next guest. If you have any questions for her, our number is 520-790-2040. Yes, I'm going to give out your private phone number. that is the number of the station. If you have any questions or comments, please feel free to call in. So, Greer has lived in Arizona since 1988, and the general election of 2016 impelled her to political action, which since April 2017 has taken the form of doing these incredible classes in civics and educating people on the structures of our federal, state, and local governments. So, and she works a lot with indivisible groups and now works with as a precinct committee person in Legislative District 10 and a state committee person also for the Arizona Democratic Party. So thanks, Greer, for joining us.
Thanks, Robin.
So do you want to talk, to explain first about Civics 101, or as you're now calling it, Civics 2.0?
Well, no, Civics 101 is still Civics 101.
Okay.
And since April of 2017, I have given the 101, in a variety of forums and slicing it a bunch of different ways, state, federal, local. And I've probably addressed over 600 people at this point, sometimes audiences of two and sometimes audiences of 60. I had my star turn on YouTube. It was very exciting. And what Civics 2.0 is a speaker series that the Pima County Democratic Party has allowed me to develop. And it is a deeper dive. The tagline is, what they didn't teach you in middle school. And that's no cut against middle school teachers. It's just that middle school doesn't usually dive too much into what city council does. So we've been looking at topics in state, federal, and local government, such as our inaugural one was city council, what is it and why do I care? And we had a speaker come. We had Councilman Steve Kozacek came and really gave us a terrific overview. I mean, yes, we know about trash collection and parks and stuff, but he really went into some of the really interesting, deep things that they do. Sharon Bronson came and talked to us about the Board of Supervisors. We've had legislators coming, giving, you know, an update on the last legislative session. So that's the kinds of things we're doing. And there is one tomorrow at Miller Golf Links Library from 2 to 3 p.m. that is the original Arizona Civics 101. And I actually am giving that one, talking about the structures of the legislature, how a bill goes through the legislature, and how as a citizen, any citizen, in fact, you don't have to be a citizen. You don't even have to be registered to vote. You can be 15 years old. If you have an opinion about pending legislation in committee during the legislative session, there's a system by which you can do a virtual thumbs up or thumbs down on this legislation. So it's a great way of civic engagement. Janice, you know this.
I do know that. And I've been to a couple of Greer's Civics 101 courses, and I like to think I stay pretty well informed, but I've learned something new in each of them. And I think the request to speak system is just incredible. I don't have to go to Phoenix to have my voice heard. I can do it in my pajamas on Sunday evening when I get the information about what bills are coming up. And Greer has done a terrific job of getting that information out to people.
And where do you get the information about bills?
I subscribe to several different emails. I'm interested in environmental issues, so I get the emails from the Sierra Club and from the Center for Biological Diversity. And Greer can tell us the ones that really are wide-ranging and that she recommends.
Yeah, there's an organization in Phoenix called Civic Engagement Beyond Voting, and their website is cebv.us. And they are some of the, I think it's mostly women in that group, and they are the same people who are were driving the Save Our Schools, the 305 proposition in 2018. And they have, they do a legislative update newsletter every week that is let's just start with this. There are 1,400 bills got dropped in the legislative session in 2019. There's no way that any individual can keep up with all those bills. Some of them are just nonsense, and some of them have a huge impact on our lives. And so people like the Ann Schneider, right? Ann Schneider at the Universal Unitarian Church in Phoenix, the CEBV people, they put out what's called a legislative update every week that tells you the standing committees in the legislature, in the House and in the Senate in Arizona. They meet on a schedule every week. And as these bills come up for discussion in these committees, that's when a citizen has the opportunity to say yes or no on these things. Pima County Democratic Party is doing training on the RTS system in January and February. And in addition, we are doing RTS office hours on Sunday afternoons and Mondays. Monday mornings, so that if you're unsure about how to use RTS or you've been trained and you can't really figure it out, you can come and we will hold your hand and we will, you know, put you through. These are the little tricks. It's not a hard system to learn, but it's persnickety a little bit sometimes.
So if people are interested in signing up for the RTS, they can go through the Civic Engagement Beyond Voting website and the... Is there another place to go?
Yes, there is. You can do it on your own. There are two steps for getting an RTS account. One is you sign up through azledge.gov, which is the Arizona State Legislature website. But that's only creating a name and a password. There's a second step, which isn't always entirely clear, that you have to activate your account. And there are two ways to do that. You can go to the Capitol, which, you know, if you're up there, that's fine. But if you're just here in Tucson, you can go to the state office building at 400 West Congress, and there's a parking garage, and it's free parking for the first half hour, I think, and that's all this will take. You go up to the second floor to the legislative office, and you use your name and your password to sign in at a specified, I was going to say computer terminal, isn't that quaint? You know, a kiosk. And that activates your account forever. You don't have to redo that every year. However, if you don't want to go downtown, what you can do is if you go to cebv.us, there's a Google form. You fill it out with your name and your email address, and you send it to them. And they have runners that go to the Capitol every twice a week, maybe. And so Robin Hiller, email address, they will set up an account for you and they'll make up an easy password like Robin123, and they will send that back to you and give you instructions about how to go in and change the password to something personal to you. And you have your account then. So there's two ways to do it. There's a do it yourself and then let CEBV do it for you.
And then once you do this, you can comment on bills that you have an interest in.
If they're on an agenda in a committee, that mm-hmm. is the only place. Well, I'll say that first. There is a back door into the RTS system. For instance, when you have something like the resolution to bring the ERA, voting for the ERA back to the floor of the Arizona legislature, that's got killed at it's been killed a lot. But the Speaker of the House or the President of the Senate has the ability to pocket that bill and not let it come, not let it be assigned to committee, not let it be heard. We found a way into RTS where you can go in and actually express your opinion about that in a thumbs up or thumbs down way and a short comment. And that was used against the Speaker of the House, Rusty Bowers, when Pam Powers Hanley and Victoria Steele came in and said, you know, there's 700 people who want you to assign this. It didn't do any good, but it felt good.
So we're going to take a quick break right now. We are speaking with Greer Warren about civics and participating in Arizona's legislative process. We'll be right back. If you have any questions or comments, call us at 520-790-2040. Thanks. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Smart Talk. I am here with Greer Warren and also with Janice Porter. And I just want to mention this funny ad that was on the last time, and it said it was about the importance of reading, and the guy was talking about how he always goes to the end of the book and reads the end. And I thought, okay, there are three people in the room, and one third of people apparently do this.
I read the Wikipedia summary. I'm hopeless.
So I just wanted to remind people that tomorrow there is a training, that you are doing a training at the Miller Golf Links Library. It's at from 2 to 3, a very short training, that is great, on Arizona Civics 101.
Yes, and it's not so much a training, not to contradict you, it's more like...
No, feel free.
It's really based to a general audience. This isn't the RTS training. This is really just nuts and bolts how the Arizona legislature works. And... It is aimed at a general audience, and even though it is sponsored by the Pima County Democratic Party, I do want to stress to anyone that there is no fundraising and there is no campaigning there, because we are hoping to, you know, build a bigger tent, and this is just information that we're doing as a community service.
So when you're out in the community talking about this and you run into people that say, I'm overwhelmed, I don't do politics, I cannot go down there. What is your response?
I have several responses. One is that Political despair is a luxury we cannot afford right now. And I'm sort of bemused by the people who say, I don't do politics, because while I understand everyone is distressed, well, not everyone, a lot of people I know are distressed and disheartened with the current state of the political narrative and discussion or lack thereof in this country. We can't do nothing. I mean, I don't do politics has no meaning for me, because everyone drives on roads. Everyone has their trash picked up. Every kid who goes to school has a right to protection from madmen with guns. Everyone needs health care. Everyone needs clean air, clean water. And if a citizen doesn't make themselves aware of the forces, and I'm not even talking about dark money or cryptic hidden forces, I'm talking about the ones that are right out there in the open that make up the quality of the life, their life, how are they going to make informed choices at the ballot box? We've heard, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu, and which is sort of a little too carnivorous for me. So I just say, if you don't do politics, somebody else is going to do politics, and it might not be to your liking. I think the other thing I tell people is that we can't shy away from the word activism, because to me, activism simply means action. And activism is how you move things forward. If you're not active, you're just staying in one place. And it is actually a tremendously American way of getting things done. So you think of activism, I think of the Declaration of Independence, the abolitionist movement, the civil rights movement, women's suffrage, LGBTQ rights, the unionism, particularly in the first half of the 20th century. These are the people who brought us The Weeknd. This was activism. And activism doesn't have to be spending 60 hours of your week doing this. Dr. Ravi, he is a busy man. It can be as simple as wearing a button. It can be as simple as calling a congressman. It can be as simple, frankly, as reading the newspaper and staying aware of things, so that when you have a vote, you can vote for, you're just not just filling in the boxes. You're voting for a person who has a set of values that reflects your own values.
And lest you think that Greer is all work all the time, you might want to know that she plays the ukulele, and she's in a ukulele band, and they're really good, and I heard them at Cyclovia last time.
Tucson meetup, ukulele Tucson ukulele meetup. Look it up.
I did not know that.
Yes. It's kept me alive for the last year, let me tell you this.
Although, and speaking of unions, I just wanted to point out that Dr. Rovi was actually the head of the medical part of the SEIU.
He's amazing.
That man has some energy.
He does. Yes. Oh, to be young again, right, girls?
Everyone in this room is young.
Yes, we're young at heart. That's right.
Three quarters of the people. Oh, and John also, who's across the glass. Young, spring chickens, all of us. So what about Civics 2.0?
All right, so Civics 2.0 is basically that speaker series we were talking about. I'm doing Arizona 101 at Civics 2.0 tomorrow. But Civics 2.0 is the third Sunday of every month, and that's where we're doing the deeper dive into the topics. We've got some really cool stuff coming up in January. Kat Ripley, who is a retired naval commander and the current executive director of the Pima Dems, who also teaches political science at Pima College, is doing a talking on Article 2 of the Constitution, the executive branch, which we think is timely in January. That's the third Sunday in January. I believe that's the 19th. In February, we have a retired State Department employee who was a senior in the consular section, is coming to talk about the State Department and how it works in the world.
And how do people sign up for that?
There is an Eventbrite link to sign up to register their free talks. And if you go to the Pima Dems website, which is pimadems.org, in the events calendar, they are listed there, and you can click on it and it will take you to a description that has the Eventbrite sign up. We learned our lesson in the first couple of events, and now we get big rooms because we had a lot of people. I mean, I encourage people to come, because it's a kind of, we're tapping into expertise that's right here in this community that is just terrific.
So I'm an ed person. And I always like to talk about how this can be incorporated. Do you think that we're having less civic education than we did 30, 40, 20 years ago? Or did we never have it?
I don't know. I didn't grow up in Arizona. I had my pocket copy of the Constitution in elementary school, so I don't know what they did in Arizona. What I do know is that they're not doing it now. There is a unit, I think, in, and you probably know better than I, in middle school where they maybe talk about the government. There is the requirement now, and I don't think it's TUSD, I think it's the state, where seniors in high school have to pass a little, they have a little unit of citizen, I don't know what they call it, but they have to pass this test. And the test is just a segment that's taken from the official U.S. citizenship test.
Right.
Now, that's fine, but it's like Trivial Pursuit, frankly. I've seen that citizenship test. It's like, who was the third president of the United States? And what state is the Statue of Liberty in? And which is fine, but there's actually two answers to that question. So I don't think it is indicative of any attempt to teach kids critical thinking. Now, what I heard about the Parkland students and how they were so able to mobilize after that horrible tragedy of the shooting at Parkland was that they had just, some of these kids had just finished a segment where they did like a mock legislation.
Oh,
do you know more about that?
Yes. So Parkland, which is a public high school where they had the horrible shooting, one of the many horrible shootings, require students to take debate. The debate subject for the year of the shooting was gun violence. So they had argued both sides of it. Because that's how debate is. You have people on either side, and you often don't get to choose your side. So you have to research how you're going to present arguments. So that is why after the shooting, there were so many incredibly articulate students who were able to speak out about it because they'd been speaking out about it and learning about what the research says, what the numbers were, what gun laws were in their state and across the United States. And so it was a required debate class, and that was the subject that year.
I mean, it's just to have that sort of intensive drive towards critical thinking. I think I've asked several people. I asked Dr. Ravi. I've asked other people like Adam Reagan and other people who are running or have run for the school board, is how could we get a group together to really lobby for more rigorous civics education or government or whatever the term they're going to use for it? I think it's got to be lobbied for heavily at the state level, but I think it's also going to involve propositions to the our local school boards of getting citizens groups to come with a proposition, maybe do a working committee to show what the pluses of these are. I mean, I don't know it's going to get anywhere in a Republican legislature in Phoenix, but certainly if the Dems win in 2020, I think there's plenty of room for that.
And I think students are for that too. When you see the number of students who are involved in the climate change movement or gun violence, they're paying attention. They're studying these issues even if they're not doing it in school.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And as we lobby and make suggestions for schools to, and I think civics is a very important thing for students to study, but we also need to allocate funding for it. I mean, we tend to just add stuff and never add the money that...
Correct. It needs to be. I think it needs to be looked at as policy, with all the attendant things of policy, of content, funding, delivery, all the things that go into developing new policy. It's not just go and run around and make a lot of noise with signs saying we should teach civics. I think there's got to be a deep background push to do that, to change policy.
Right. So we have a minute left. Is there anything you would like to add in the next now 30 seconds?
TikTok. There's a very, there's, oh, yes, I will do this. So there is, I think a lot of us can agree that no one is above the law. At 5 p.m. on Tuesday, I thought it was 4:30, Ginny says at 5.
It's 5.
5 o'clock p.m. on Tuesday, 405 West Congress, no one is above the law, impeachment rally. It's going to be across the country. Bring signs, bring flashlights, hundreds of rallies across the country. This is a little activism you can do with just a small investment of your time.
Okay, well, thank you. We've been speaking with Greer Warren, and Janice Porter has been here also as the co-host. Thank you for listening. We're here every Saturday, 520-790-2040. Why the number now? And there is also a workshop tomorrow at Miller Golf Links, Arizona Civics 101, 2 to 3. Welcome to everyone. It is nonpartisan. And thank
I can't promise completely nonpartisan, but I can no fundraising, no campaigning.
Thank you very much for coming in, and we'll see you next week. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.